Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Chedamun Aleph, seven lines down. The Gemara goes, Amamar, which is reviewing something that we saw yesterday, which is Yom Shataru Ebo. Yesh Yom Shiataru Ebo. There are days in which you do see the Nigaim, and there are days in which you do not see the Nigaim. That's based on the Pasuk that we saw before, which is Uveyom Heiraot Bo. So what does it mean, Uveyom Heiraot Bo? So there the Gemara had a drasha that there are days that you see it and days when you do not see it. This all comes out of the psukim by Nigaim, which are talking about the different possibilities when he shows up to the Kohen as to what he's going to do with this tzarat. If it expands and it grows over his whole body, then he's going to be tahor. If there is michia, if there's live basar, healthy basar in the middle of the tzarat, then it's problematic and it's going to be tameh right away. And it says here, Uviyom Heiraot Bo Basarcha Yitma. That Vayom Heiraot, we had the drasha yesterday, is that Heiraot comes to teach you. What does it mean, Heiraot? Meaning that there are times when you do see it and times when you don't see it. The Gemara's yesterday gave us the drasha based on the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda. That meant that Chatan Shinalad Bo Nega Notnim Lo Zan Yimei Mishteh Lo Beito Luxuto Vechem Regel Notnim Lo Shivat Yimei Regel. That we don't look at the Nigaim during the regel, and we don't look at the Nigaim of a Chatan. So now, my mashmo. How do we learn this out of that Pasuk? Samar Abaye, imkein lichtov rachmana biyom, that it should say biyom heiraot. My uviyom, shmamina yesh yom sheata ro'e bo, v'yesh yom she'i ata ro'e bo. So the extra vav there is what teaches you this limud. Rav amar kula kroyite rahu. The entire pasuk is extraneous. Dimkein lichtov rachmana ubeheiraot. Ubeheiraot, you could have just started the pasuk. You don't have to say ubeyom heiraot. You could have just written ubeheiraot bo basarcha yitma. What is the uveyom? So the uveyom is the extraneous piece of the pasuk. And that extraneous piece of the pasuk is what teaches us the limud of shmamina yesh yom shataru ebo, yesh yom shiataru ebo. What's Abaye going to do with that? How mi baile biyom velo belaylo? He needs the extra word biyom there to teach you only see nigaim during the day. Do not see nigaim at night. Biyom velo belaylo minale. How does Rava know that fact that you're only allowed to see nigaim during the day and not at night? Nafkale milachol mare enei akoin. So in the pasuk that's right before this, it says in parach tifrach hatzarat boor vikista hatzarat kol or hanega miroshu ve'araglav v'chol mar'ei enei hakohen. So this is based on what is visible, what the kohen can see. So from that he learns out v'chol mar'ei enei hakohen that it's something that the kohen can see visibly without any other aid, without any artificial light that's there. Be'avaye, what's a bai going to do with that pasuk? How mi baile? To tell you that a Kohen that only has eyesight out of one eye is not sufficient, because it says, enei in plural of the Kohen. You know what? Rav also needs the limud from there for that same reason, to teach you about Suma Bechat Meinav is disqualified from seeing Nigaim. Where it says, Enochanami. Ella biyomu belaylo minole. But then, where does Rav know that you can only see Nigaim during the day and not at night? Nafgale, he learns it out of a pasuk later on, which is mikinega nirali babayit, that there is a nega that like a nega I saw in the house. Li velodo uri. So li comes to teach me that you can see it's you yourself that sees the nega, but not through velodo uri, not through light or other lighting that gives you the ability to see the nega. Well, how do you see without the aid of light? It means during the daytime. So babayi mihotam. But he says, Enochanami, that's a good limud that you're bringing, but havamine hani mile tuma delav de gufe. There we're talking about bayit. We're talking about nigaim of the bayit. Maybe over there there's a requirement of seeing it without any aid of light. About tuma de gufe, when you're talking about the tzarat of his guf, afilu lo ro nami, even if you have light or artificial light that is allowing you to see it, maybe it would be okay. Kamash v'lon, that's why I need two limudim. One limud to teach me by the bayit, and the second limud to teach me by the guf. Then in both those cases, you do require it be done during the day, and not with the aid of any light. In the end, they both have a limud out of the pasuk, whether it's from uviyom, one of those two teaches you this extra din, which is uviyom heiraot, that teaches you that there's a day in which you do see it, a day in which you don't see it. And then we had yesterday the Rav Amar and Abaye. Abaye said, Mashma'ut Dorshimi Kemenayu, which Tosafot has an innovative explanation of that. And Rava said that the difference in the Nafkamina between them is a Dava Rishut Ika Benayu. That Rabbi Yehuda, who learns out of the Pasuk of Vayom Hera'ot, says, from there we don't learn out because it's a Chidush. And there, because Eitzim Ve'Avanim Ba'alma, you can't learn out of that din by the Bayit. And Finu et Abayit, you can't learn it out of there. And here you learn it out of the case of Vayom Hera'ot. And Hera'ot is only talking about Dinei Mitzvah. Therefore, only with regards to a mitzvah do you have the right to postpone or to take the option of opting out of looking at the tzarat. On the other hand, Rabbi, who learns it out of the pasuk v'tzivak v'enu pinu et abayit, he's able to learn out both reshut and mitzvah. He has both psukim. He uses both psukim. One pasuk by the bayit, one pasuk by nega of the guf. The negaim of the guf teach us that even for that's for a mitzvah, but it still applies to negayim of a guf. The one by the bayit teaches us even for reshut. But now that we know that negayim guf also have this din of postponement, then we can also now extrapolate over from bayit to guf to teach us that also by reshut that is the case. So that would be the nafkamina between the two of them, whether it's only for dvar mitzvah that we opt out of looking at the nega. That's the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda according to Rava. And the sheet of Rabbi, which is that even for a dvar reshut, we can opt out of seeing the Negaim, like for instance, allowing the person time to clear out their house. So in those cases, we can also postpone or wait to see the Nega, just like we do by the Bar Mitzvah, but he learns that out of both Psukim, both of Yom Heraot and the Pasuk of Itzivah Kuenu Finu et Abayit. Alright, that's the end of this Sugi over here. Next Mishnah. Va'odamai Rabbi Meir. In addition to this, Rabbi Meir says, Mlaketa dam atzamota vivimo. Person's allowed to collect up the bones of his father or his mother. Mipnei shesimcha hilo. Meaning that he could do this on Chol HaMoed because it's a happy occasion for him. Happy occasion that he's bringing his bones of his parents to their final resting place, to their family catacomb. So because of that, he's excited and it's a simcha and therefore it's not inappropriate for him to be doing this on Chol HaMoed. So that's the way that Rabbi Meir states it, and that's what Rabbi Meir says, it's fine here. There are others that say that Mipnei Shehi Simcha Lo is either because we know that the Gemara tells us that when Nitakela Basar, once the flesh of the individual is eaten up and all that you have left is the bones that are there, then Nitkapru Kol Avonotav, then a person's sins are all forgiven. So that's the reason that is Mipnei Shehi Simcha Lo, that's the Simcha. Or, he Simcha is that decay of the body has now been completed. And now what's left is going to remain there. So that's Mishmanei Shehi Simcha Lo. So different views of why there's Simcha here. But because of that Simcha, he permits it on Chol HaMoed. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Ava Evel Hulo. What are you talking about? That's not a Simcha for him. This is a difficult time for him. Now, obviously, most of the Rishonim believe the reason it's an Evel is because he's seeing the bones of his parents. And that's very upsetting. The other possibility is that it's the seeing of the bones triggers the remembering or the memory of the mita or of the death, and that causes the tzar. So it's an indirect, because he sees the skeleton of his parents, that reminds him of the death of his parents. But most just say that it's the skeleton itself, the skeletal remains of his parents upset him and makes him very upset, and that's Mipnei Evil Hulo, then you can't do it on the Chol HaMoed. Lo yorer adam al meito, v'lo yasbidenu kodum neregel 30 yom. The second half of this is easier to understand, is that you can't give a eulogy within 30 days of the regel. So that's as Rashi says, Leis b'deno shim meit lo meit b'toch 30 yom. Is it within 30 days of the regel, lo yiskor sabdan las bido. You shouldn't hire a eulogizer to perform the eulogy. And we'll see in the Gemara why that is. Different reasons as to why that is. But the earlier one, which is lo yorer adam al meito, this is more difficult to explain what exactly this lo ye'orer means. So the Yerushalmi, the way the Yerushalmi explains it is that it's something that is done for the kavod of this individual. For instance, when a person is eulogizing on someone else, he also mentions this other mate that's involved with it. And that brings back or reignites the raw feelings that were there when this person passed away. Others suggest that the orer means to have tons of eulogies, extra long eulogies in the Avel. As I explained, that is a shloshim, like the equivalent of having some sort of sudat shloshim or sudat shana for the person on the yortzeit. That might be what we're talking about here. Or others explain here that this was a person that was hired to go around, as Rashi suggests over here, to go around and to either invite the relatives to come hear a eulogy, or it's a person who goes around and tries to trigger those feelings or engender feelings of avelut in other people by having them remember their bad things, and then they can now join with this individual or sympathize with this individual who's in pain. Or the other possibility is that this is a eulogizer going around and trying to trigger those feelings in people, but he's really trying to sell himself. He's going around as if he's advertising, and he's engendering those feelings in people in order to advertise his services as a great eulogizer. So both of these are restricted within 30 days of the regel. 30 days of the regel, easy to understand why that is a problem, because within 30 days of the regel, we're already within the perimeter or the sphere of influence of the regel. That's what we do. Shloshim yom lifnei regel, we begin to learn the halachot of that regel. So within 30 days, we're already within a period of time where you have to worry about the regel. You have to start thinking about the regel. So now we'll discuss that more in detail as we go through the Gemara. Biraminu, hamalakeit atzmot aviv v'imo harizimit abel lehem kol hayom. So Josh, this is what you asked before. A person who collects the atzmot of his father and his mother to go rebury them in the family plot, he has a velut for that day in which he collects the bones. But once nightfall comes, the avelut is over. Is that avelut yom achat? And in other places, the Gemara talks about the possibility that it's only mixata yom kakulo, and you can have a very short avelut. You can simply take off your shoes. You can do something that gives a siman of avelut associated with this. Now we have one qualifier. The qualifier is not necessarily relevant to the question that's being asked over here. It just happens to be a qualifier of the braita that we just quoted, which is Amar Rav Chista, afilu tzurin lo b'sidino. Even if they are wrapped up in a cloth or within his tunic. Now, in terms of what this means, you have two possibilities. The statement of Chista can even modify the resha of the braita we brought, or the seif of the braita that we brought. It can either modify hamalakeita matzot aviv v'imo harizim mitabelehem kol hayom, and then that's afilu tzurim lo b'sidino, and that's the way Rashi reads it, which means that even if he doesn't uncover or dig up the bones of his parents to go bury them, he simply had them wrapped in a cloth, and now he's going to bury them, that will also trigger the avelut of one day. That's one way to read it. The other way to read it, which Tosafot favors, and seems to be a little bit of a simpler reading of this, is that ul'erev ein mitabelehem, that when you have the avelut, that's during the day. But at night, there is no avelut, even if the bones remain inside of the sedin. Even though he hasn't buried them yet, or it's going to take him some time to rebury them, nevertheless, the avelut terminates after the first day, because that's the only requirement he has in avelut, even though they're now tzurim lo b'sidino. That's the other way to read Rav Chista. Either way, the question really derives from the braita itself, which is the braita itself clearly indicates that there's avelut when you're melakei tatzamot. So how could Rabbi Meir and our Mishnah suggest that mipnesha simcha hilo? What type of simcha this is if this is avelut? Amar Abayis, Abayis says no problem, amend the Mishnah to read this way. Ema mipnesha simchat haregel alav. Because the simcha of the regel is upon him. Rashi has an interesting way to read this. Rashi says, what does it mean, Pinesha Simchat HaRegel Alav? Klomar, Harbehu Osek B'Simchat HaRegel. He's very involved in dealing with the regel. Ve'inu Mitzteir Melakamit HaMatzamot Avivimo. And therefore he is not Mitzteir. He doesn't get upset. It doesn't bother him when he's doing the Likut HaMatzamot Avivimo. Basically, he's just too busy with the regel. And because he's so involved with the regel, he doesn't really have time, or he doesn't have the bandwidth to deal with being an avel or upset about moving his parents' bones, and therefore that's what it means, mipnei shehi simcha lo. Now, you could have understood this in a different manner, which is, what does it mean, mipnei shehi simcha lo, which means that the regel is a simcha. The regel itself is a simcha, and that makes it mutually exclusive with the feelings of avelut. By the fact that he has to have simcha on the regel, that precludes him from having the feelings of avilut on the regel. So that's another way to read it. It's not the way the Rashi reads it, but also seems to be maybe a simpler way to read this, which is that the simcha of the regel is what's driving his inability here to have feelings of avilut. According to Abaye, according to Rashi, what happens here is that you don't have time for avilut. You're just not going to get involved in the avilut because you're so involved in the simcha de regel. So therefore, we don't worry about the fact that Malakeit Tzamot has some sort of avilut associated with it. Others read that the basic idea that there is no avilut on the regel. So yeah, you're right, you're supposed to have avilut, but because there is no avilut on the regel, it's mutually exclusive, there's going to be no avilut. There's going to be simcha de regel, there's going to be no avilut. Since there's no avilut, there's no problem in doing this. So that's the way you would likely read what Abaye is saying over here. Now, you do have to explain Rabbi Yossi, according to all of this, where Rabbi Yossi still says it's problematic. Now, Rabbi Yossi obviously agrees that there's no avelut on the regel, but Rabbi Yossi gives credence to the person's emotional feelings, which is, yes, you may not be able to display avelut, you may not be able to act like an avel on the regel, but nevertheless, in your heart, you're going to have those feelings. You're going to have feelings of avelut, you're going to have feelings of pain. And those feelings in your heart are relevant and problematic on Chol HaMoed. So you're right, there'll be no outward avilut, there'll be no time for a quote-unquote avilut, but the bottom line is the person's going to feel bad in his heart. Since he feels bad in his heart, that's enough to say that we shouldn't allow it on the Yom Tov or on the Chol HaMoed. Now you could explain then, go back and say that for Rabbi Meir, he has both aspects. He has both the fact that the regel is a simcha that blocks out the avilut, but also the fact that even in his heart, he's not really so upset, either because he has no time, but maybe even for the original reason, which is, it's not really such a bad thing. The Malakeit Tzamot might require avilut, but in his heart, he's not really so upset. He might actually be happy about this. And so, putting that all together, he allows you to do it on the Moed. Right? V'lo yar era al mito. Person can't do this irura, which we gave different explanations. My lo yar era al mito. What does that mean? Amrav kad hadar sefdano bimarova. When the eulogizers go around in Eretz Yisrael, Amrei, they would say, Yifkuni mi, kol mirirei liba. Cry with me, all those who are of ill heart, those that are feeling bad, have something wrong, that are despondent. So again, it could either be a call to all those that should be mitabel on this individual. It's going around to all the relatives and telling them, come on, you got to join us in the avilut. Could be just a general statement of anybody who's having a bad time or bad things are happening to them, you're upset, so you can understand the pain of this avelut, you should join in. Or, again, I mentioned the possibility that it's an advertisement for the eulogizer going around saying I'm a great eulogizer. Or it could be something like a shloshim. Come and celebrate, quote-unquote, the shloshim of the individual. Come and cry. All those that are despondent, come and cry along with this individual about the loss that he had. So all of those are feelings that are negative. And because they're negative, they're going to cause a problem, which we're going to see in a second, which is kodem the regular shloshim yom. Maishna shloshim yom. What's so important about the 30 days? So Amar Rav Kahana, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav. So this is the position of Rav. Maseh ba'adam echad shekines ma'ot alot regel. Person had collected money in order to pay for his trip up to Yerushalayim for the regel. Ubasaf dan. All of a sudden a eulogizer came. Va'amad al petach beto. He was standing on the stairs in front of his house, or the doorway in front of his house. And this individual obviously had lost a relative, or his wife had lost a relative recently. Unitaltan ishto unitanatan lo. His wife took the money and paid it to the eulogizer. V'nimnav lo alam. And then he couldn't go up to the rego. She basically spent their savings on the eulogizer. So then, botasha amru lo yarir amito v'lo yasbidenu kodem rego shloshim yom. It's a budgetary issue. People are going to have huge expenditures coming into the rego, both for aliyah the rego as well as all the other expenditures associated with the rego. And we want people to save up the money and utilize it for that. But if people save money and then spend it on the eulogies or spend it on the eulogizers, then they won't have the budget to deal with the regel. So just a practical budget issue. We're going to help you budget for the regel and not allow you to have any large expenditures going into the regel. That's Rav's position. Shmuel Amar, Shmuel says, the fee, she'ein ha'meit mishtakach min alev 30 yom. A mate is not forgotten from the person's heart for 30 days. My benayu. what's the nafkamina between these two positions? David bichinam. If the eulogizer is willing to do it for free. So for Rav, it's not a problem if he does it for free, because then you don't have this budget issue. You're not going to have a problem with money for the regal. On the other hand, for Shmuel, who says the whole issue is not having the person feel the pain of the mate into the regal because it lasts for 30 days, then even if he's willing to do it for free, that doesn't help you out. You still have the emotional problem that is generated by this eulogy. Now, Rashi explains, what does it mean? He says, it must be do pachon mishloshim yom lifnei haregel. He does it within 30 days of the regel. Ati the misbed beregel. He'll end up eulogizing on the regel itself, but adayin lo shachcho, because he still didn't forget about the mate. So Rashi says that they were afraid of him continuing to eulogize during the moed or during the cholam moed, because it's within that 30-day period, and then within that 30-day period is a period where the person's still active in remembering the mate, and because the eulogy was done, he's going to continue to eulogize, or he's going to push to eulogize even more. So in order to put a stop to that, we say no eulogizing within 30 days. So Rashi explains it. Tosafot has a slightly different explanation to this, which is the problem here is the safdano, the person who's creating the hesped, because the hesped itself engenders feelings or negative feelings or grieving feelings. And if you trigger those grieving feelings close enough to the regel, they're going to persist through the regel and they're going to cause you a problem during the regel. Not necessarily because you're going to hire a eulogizer or you're going to eulogize more. It's just those feelings are going to make it hard for you to be happy on the regel. And that's why they're problematic. But then Tosafot says something amazing. Again, it's a psychological insight that has gained more credence in the modern era. But he says something amazing here. He says, Aval hu atzmo shari. For you yourself to give the eulogy, that's fine. You may not hire someone else to do it, but you yourself can give it. You know why? Because yoter mitapek mitzaro ayedei tzaka. Because there's a cathartic experience in speaking about the mate, eulogizing for the mate, v'smach lachar zman, and that'll engender better feelings in the long run. So he says, speaking about it, expressing those feelings, getting them out, that is a positive thing. Even though at the moment they're negative, the result in the long run will be better, and therefore it actually turned out to be that it'll help you with simchat haregel. So therefore you can do it, not the maspid. If the maspid does it, then we worry about the feelings lingering into the regel and causing you problems in the regel. Whereas if you yourself do it, it's fine because of that cathartic experience allows you to clear out the grief and then clear the way for the regel that's later on. So Tosafot says this. We had a similar limud at the end of the Gemara in Yoma about which is a better way to deal with problems or pain. Is it better to yisirei milibo, just forget about it? Or is it better to yisichena, that he should speak about it? Is it better to talk over things or express those things that are negative or bothering you and that will clear them up? Or is it better just to cover it up and push it away? Which is the better way to deal with them? Of course, there's different people deal with these types of things in different ways, as well as depends obviously on the experience and what's happening here. But Tosfot does have this insight that a person themselves can speak about it because that will be helpful in the long run. It does have therapeutic value in speaking about the mate and eulogizing for the mate. All right, next Mishnah. Ein chofrim kuchin ukvarot b'moed. You can't carve out or really dig out. Kuchin are these like sepulchral caves. And kvarot are more like mausoleums. We're going to see that in the Gemara is going to describe that. B'moed. You can't do this on Chol Moed. Aval mechanchin et kuchin b'moed. But you're allowed to adjust the kuchin b'moed. Let's call it that. We'll see in the Gemara more about this. V'osin nivrechet b'moed. You're allowed to make really like a shallow pool that is used, according to Rashi and many, it's used for a laundering clothing. Tosafot here brings the possibility that it's used actually for the taro of the mate and for cleaning the tachrichim of the mate, that it was actually part of the theme of the Mishnah. Varon imamit bechatzer, you're allowed to make an aron for the mate when your mate is in the chatzer with you. Rabbi Yehuda Oser, Elim Ken Yishimon Nisarim. Rabbi Yehuda says you can't do this unless you have the boards that are there ready to go. If you have the boards ready to go, then you can put together the box to put bury the mate in. But if you don't have the boards ready, you can't go ahead and make the boards in order to take care of the mate. Right here, there's a major question that's asked by most of the Rishonim. Rashi over here says, what does it mean, Ein chofrim kuchin v'kvarot b'moed? You're not allowed to dig graves on the moed. So Rashi says here, the Torah meitim. This is for meitim. Shedarkam nachpor kuchin v'kvarot zmanan l'tzorach meitim shi'amutu. This is in advance of people passing away. They dig them out in advance in order to have them ready for people when they pass away in the future. So that means that you're actually digging them out Chol HaMoed, not to be used on Chol HaMoed. And the Rabbeinu Chananel does a similar thing. Rabbeinu Chananel says, Perish li kaver behen lachar regel. These are graves that are being dug now to be used after the regel. So that's the first thing. According to many here, the Mishnah is talking about a case where you're digging not for the mate itself, but you're digging in advance of the possibility of people passing away. It's in preparation for the people passing away. Rashi adds on an additional item, which is that it's a tircha yeterahu. It's a unbelievable undertaking. It's way too much work for them to do, and therefore it's impermissible on Chol HaMoed. Now, this is heavy-duty work, because we're talking about most times going into bedrock or digging these things into the graves. The graves were not dug like we do pits into the ground, but they were structures that were made either from digging into the bedrock or from building out a structure, and therefore there was much more involved in terms of the undertaking. But then we talk about the Nivrechet, and then we talk about the Aron of the Mate. All of a sudden, Tosafot says, let me remind you that there's a Mishnah in Beitzah. And the Mishnah in Beitzah says that you can do Kol Tzorchei HaMate on Yom Tov Sheni. Yom Tov Sheni, you're allowed to do anything that the mate needs to be done without regard to Yom Tov Sheni. You can cut myrtle for him in case of the smell. You can make the tachrichim for him. You can do whatever the mate needs on Yom Tov Sheni. So Tosafot says, I don't understand. Over there, the Mishnah Beitzah says you can do whatever you want, meaning that Hutra Yom Tov Sheni L'gabi HaMeit. That's basically what the Gemara in Beitzah says. And also over here, you have Chol HaMoed. And Chol HaMoed is a problem. So Tosafot attempts the first answer and says, well, maybe there's a difference. Chol HaMoed is a din d'oraita. Whereas, when it comes to Yom Tov Sheni, that's a din d'rabbanan. So that works well for the last day of Yom Tov. That works well for the 8th day of Pesach, the 9th day by Sukkot, and the 2nd day of Shavuot. Because all of those days are a 2nd day of Yom Tov, which otherwise would have been a Yom Chol. The problem really comes up with the 2nd day of Yom Tov when it would have been Chol HaMoed. I mean, the 2nd day of Pesach, the 2nd day of Sukkot, which is the 2nd day of Yom Tov, Chutzaretz, but it's Chol HaMoed otherwise, then how can you claim that it's only a Din d'Rabbanan? Because underlying Yom Tov Sheni is also Chol HaMoed then. So if that's the case, they should both be d'oraita. And that's what it says. The Gemara never distinguishes between Yom Tov Sheni at the beginning of the holiday and Yom Tov Sheni at the end of the holiday. So he ends up rejecting that distinction between the two Mishnayot. And then he says maybe the difference here is the difference between, over here we're talking about digging in advance of those that are there, versus the Mishnah Beitzah is dealing with a mate that is present. Since the mate is here already, therefore you're permitted to dig or do whatever you need to do in the Mishnah and Beitzah. Whereas over here, you can't do it because you're trying to do it in advance. You're trying to do an anticipation of people passing away. So over here, it's not permissible. Over there, it is permissible. And Ein Ochanami, if the mate was here and was necessary, you could do whatever you needed for the mate, even on Chol HaMoed. Some argue that Rashi is saying otherwise, and the Ramban also suggests something like this, which is, maybe here, Chafira is out of the question no matter what. Chafira is out of the question because Rashi says, Tircha Yeterah, it's just way too much of an undertaking. And the Ramban suggests over there that it is, Chafira is not allowed because, even by Tzorchei Rabim, we said that Chafira is not allowed unless it was absolutely necessary. And the assumption being that these Kuchin and Kvarot were done in advance, just like they want to do it on Chol HaMoed for after the Moed, there were others done beforehand for him now. So since it's not absolutely necessary, therefore you have the ability to dig beforehand, but not on the Moed itself. The items that are found in the Gemara Beitzah are all items that you can't find, and therefore they need to be done on the spot. But in Achanami, if you could find them from before, you could have utilized them. But here, Chafira, which is so extensive, we saw that before by the Borot, that you're allowed to do Chatitah by the Borot, but not Chafira. So also over here, you can do chatita, you can do the fixing, mechandchin at the kuchin, but you can't do the chafirata kuchin, because it's just too great an undertaking. It's something that we just don't allow, even for possibly tzorchei rabim. So that would explain the difference between the Mishnah here and the Mishnah in Beitza. Tosafot in the end concludes and says something interesting, which does have relevance to us today, which he says, "Mahay tama yachol liot mutar bizman hazeh." For that exact reason, it might be that today it's mutar. Lefi she'ein osim kuchin kvarot michayim. Today we don't dig graves in advance. Since we don't dig graves in advance, you can't make this claim that they have ready-made graves, and therefore you can't do it, because they aren't ready-made. If that's the case, maybe you could dig the grave if you had the mate in front of you, even on Cholam Moed, based on our situations where we do not have the graves made in advance. And now the Gemara says, "To my kuchin and my kvarot." What are these kuchin and kvarot that are mentioned in the Mishnah? Amar Rav Yehuda, kuchin bechafira. Kuchin are done through digging or chiseling through. Ukvarot bibinyan is done through building a structure. So that's why I described the kuchin as a chafira, meaning like a sepulchral cave, whereas the kvarot were chafira, which is something like a mausoleum. Tainami hochi. We have a similar brayta that supports that understanding. Melein kuchin, melein kvarot, kuchin bechafira, ukvarot bibinyan. Aval mechanchin at the kuchin, which we saw in the Mishnah, you're allowed to adjust the kuchin. Ketzer mechanchin, how do you do these adjustments? Amar Rav Yehuda, shimaya aroch mikatzro. If it was long, too big, you can shorten it up. In the brayta we have it saying, marich bo umarchiv bo. You can extend it, you can widen it, depending what the mate is. By the way, that's an indication of what is allowed here, meaning that the items were pre-dug to a fixed size. And then when you actually had the mate in front of you, then you can make the adjustments that you need to make. That's what the Mishnah is saying over here. Those adjustments are permissible because that's something you couldn't have anticipated before the Moed. On the other hand, that the fact that people are going to pass away in Chol HaMoed, that's something you could have anticipated, and that work could have been done beforehand. I mean, you can have these things dug out beforehand in anticipation that people might die. But once they have died and now you have to adjust it, that's permissible because, first of all, it's not as big tircha. As Rashi says, lepe tircha kulihai. It's not such a big tircha. And in addition, it's something that you couldn't have dealt with before the Moed. Osim nivrechet, you can make these laundering pools. My nivrechet, what is this nivrechet? Amar Yehuda, zubikia. It's like a hollow creek, a shallow pool. It says, v'atanya nivrechet v'abikia. You have a brayta that says, nivrechet v'abikia, suggesting that nivrechet and abikia are separate items. They're not the same item. So Amar Abaye, v'itaymar of Kahana, geha ubar geha. It's equivalent of a trough, and a bar geha is like a troughlet. Or the way Rashi describes it here, you have a ditch, and then you have an overflow ditch. So you have a ditch that collects all the sewage water, and then you have an overflow ditch that catches it if the main one is full and it rolls over into the smaller one. So the same thing with a nivrechet and a bikia. There's a larger pool and a smaller pool. It's the main pool and the overflow pool. But these are these shallow pools that are utilized, as Tosafot suggests over here, that they're utilized for taking care of the mate, whether it's laundering the Tachrichim, or it's taking care of the mate itself and doing the taher, the mate itself. The other possibility is it's for kibus, which is simply for laundering. It has nothing to do with the case of the mate here. Simply another item that is allowed on the Moed. You're allowed to do it for laundry. And Tosfot asks, wait a minute, you're not allowed to launder on Chol HaMoed. So what's the question here? It says it's for those that they have an exception to the rule. There are certain people that are allowed to launder on Chol HaMoed. So this pit you can make because it's not too big a tircha for those individuals that need kibus on Chol HaMoed. V'aronim ha-meit b'chatzer. Tanina l'had etanu rabbanan. We have a mission that supports the position of the chachamim, which is osim kol tzarchei ha-meit. You're allowed to do anything that the mate needs. Gozizim lo si'aro. You can cut his hair. U'mechabsim lo k'suto. You can clean up his clothing. Vosim lo aron. You can make for him a coffin. Minasrim ha-minusarim b'erev yom tov. You can bring the aron from boards that were already planed and cut mi'erev yom tov. You can even bring the boards and plane them and cut them on Yom Tov itself, but that's Bitzina Betoch Beito. You can only do that privately within his house. So here, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is most likely the Tanakhama of our Mishnah. And then you have the dissenting opinion of Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah, which it says that the Nisarim have to be present beforehand. So he obviously believes that the Nisarim is too big an undertaking to do on Yom Tov itself because it's a Tircha Yeteira, it's a ton of work. That's one. Number two is it's possible that boards are available beforehand. So that's something you can get. But we're not going to let you start doing that work on Yom Tov itself or on Chol HaMoed itself. Now, why it has to be done b'tzina'ah, it has to be done in private and not publicly. Don't we have the principle is that anything that's asur mishum marat ayin is asur both in the public and in the private. Doesn't matter where you do it. So you have to suggest over here that this is something that either makes a ton of noise or this is something that is not clear that it's being done for the mate because people do these boards for other things. So because of that, if you do it b'tzina'ah, it's okay because we know it's a necessity. It's something that has to be done. Now then, b'feresia, you're already attracting attention. And that is attention that we don't want because it's going to be mezalzel in the moed. Now, Tosafot over here suggests that you only need the mate there to make this aron or do this work if it's not known that there was a mate. But if it's someone that's very well known and they're doing this aron for them and it's obvious that they're doing it for that individual, then it's not a problem. And he says, oh, in our small towns in Europe where we live, everybody knows everybody's business and therefore you can make an aron because everybody knows that he has a mate that died. And that he's making the aron, even if the mate's not in front of him. So Tosafot says that maybe for us, we don't even need the mate there in order to do this. All right, next Mishnah. Ein nosim nashim b'moed. You're not allowed to get married on Chol HaMoed. Lo betulot v'lo almanot. Doesn't matter if you're marrying a woman for who it's her first marriage, whether it's an almanah, a woman who it's not her first marriage. V'lo miyabmim ipnei shesimcha hilo. And you can't perform Yibum because it's a Simcha for him. Meaning the same language that was used in the Mishnah that we had in the previous Amud. B'pinesh is Simcha Yilo. It's a happy occasion for him. Avo Makzirhu et Rushato. He's allowed to return his divorced wife. Because, obviously, the implications of that are it's not such a great Simcha for him to return his divorced wife. Now, the Tosafot brings the Yushalmi that says it's only true if it was a Grusha Me Nisuin. Where they were fully married, divorced, and then got remarried. On the other hand, if it's Me'erusin, then there still is the din of Simcha because they never were fully married. They didn't have a full-fledged marriage beforehand. Bosa isha tachshita b'moed. A woman can make her jewelry or take care of her jewelry on Chol HaMoed. The Gemara will discuss what exactly that means. Woman should not perform this plastering of lime on her body. It was basically a way to remove the hair from the body, like a waxing type of process. Because in the process of doing it, first of all, it's very painful, and it leaves her feeling or looking not so great up front, even though it has longer-term benefits, and we don't want her doing this on Chol HaMoed, because it's going to leave her in a uncomfortable position or not feeling well, and she's going to have tzar or pain on Chol HaMoed, which we don't want. Hayidyot tofer kitarko, a individual can stitch like normally, because he's not an uman, he's obviously someone that's not an expert in this, and therefore he can stitch, assuming that it's necessary or there's a dispensation to do it on Chol HaMoed, Ba'uman machliv. And if you have an expert that does it, he can't stitch because his stitch is way too fine and he can't do the work. So you can machliv, you can do a cross stitch or a twisted stitch. So it's not a problem. Misargin et amitot, you're allowed to tie up the beds. Or basically the way that they used to have it was that they used to have the frame of a bed on which they would put a throw of leather that was tied around the sides, and misargin means that they used to tie it up and put it onto there. That you're allowed to do. Rabbi Yossi Omer, mamtichin. You can't actually tie them up, but you can tighten it on Chol HaMoed. All of these things we're going to get to in the Gemara. They're going to go through each one of them. Gemara says, v'chi simcha hilo mayhavi. What is the problem with getting married on Chol HaMoed? Because he's going to be happy. Mishnei simcha lo. Isn't that what we want him to be? Don't we want him to be happy? What's wrong with getting married and being happy? So Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, V'chein Amar Rabbi Elazar, Amar Rabbi Oshaya, V'Amri Lo Amar Rabbi Elazar, Amar Rabbi Chanina, L'fi She'ein Ma'arvin Simcha B'Simcha. Because you're not allowed to mix up Smachot. Here you're confusing the Smachot. You have the Simcha of the Nisuin, and you have the Simcha of the Moed. As Rashi says, Klomar, B'inan D'Lismach B'Simcha T'Moed L'Chudei. We want you focused. We want you directed towards the happiness of the Moed. We don't want you distracted with something else. Ein marvin simcha b'simcha. Rabba bar Rav Huna amar mipnei shemeniach simchat haregel v'osek b'simchat ishto. He is going to brush off or brush aside the requirement of simchat haregel in order to have simchat ishto. I mean, it's going to detract from his Simchat HaRegel by focusing on Simchat Ishto. Amrele Abaye the Rav Yosef had the Rabba Barav Huna Deravu. That what Rabba Barav Huna says is a member of Rav as well. The Amar of Daniel Bar Katina Marav. Minayin Sheino Sim Nashim B'Moed. How do you know that you're not allowed to get married on Chol HaMoed? Shnemar. V'samachta B'chagecha. B'chagecha V'lo B'ishtecha. They have to have Simcha on the Chag, but the Simcha has to be of the Chag and not B'ishtecha, not your wife. Now we have two other reasons given for why you cannot get married on the Chol HaMoed. Because of the great undertaking that is needed for putting together a wedding. And you can't do that simultaneously with the undertaking of Yom Tov and Chol HaMoed. It's just too much to do. So therefore, they are, in a sense, mutually exclusive. We have a problem is if you allow people to get married on Chol HaMoed, then or on Yom Tov itself, what are people going to do? They're going to postpone their weddings till the regel. Because then basically they're going to get a bonus, two for one. They'll be able to have their Yom Tov meal, plus that'll be the meal for the wedding, and you'll save a lot of money. It's a big expenditure for Yom Tov, big expenditure for the wedding. If I do them both together, I save money. It's half the cost to do it that way. So that's why we don't let you do it, because people are going to then postpone their weddings till the regel. And then when they postpone it to the regel, they're going to push out the din or the mitzvah of pru or vu. And we don't want them to do that. So we want them to get married during the year at different occasions. We don't want them all waiting to get married on the regel. So we say, no getting married on the regel. Now what's interesting is that in Europe, this actually ended up being the case, which is that there was a plethora of weddings. If you look at all the ketubot that you find from Europe, they all got married on Erev Shabbat. Why did they get married on Erev Shabbat? Because by the time they finished the wedding, the Sudat Nisuin, the Suda for the wedding, was the Friday night meal for Shabbat. And since they were poor, they couldn't afford so many meals, so they got the bonus. They had the Shabbat meal and the wedding meal come as one, and he saved a lot of money. So they ended up doing that with Shabbat. They didn't do it with Yom Tov, but truthfully, they did do it with Shabbat. Now, just looking at the four reasons that we have here, if we just break them down, the first two reasons, at least according to Tosafot, are reasons midoraita. Those are reasons from the Torah why you may not get married on Yom Tov. The latter two reasons that are mentioned here are clearly derabanan, which is either mipnei torach or mipnei pito perir rivyo. That is an imposition of the chachamim in order to get a desired outcome. So the latter two for sure are derabanan. The first two very likely could be deoraita. The question you can ask about the first two is, are they the same or are they different? So, is Ein Marvim Simcha V'Simcha the same thing as Mimniach Simchat HaRegel V'Osek V'Simchat Ishto? Or are they different? The Rambam connects the two of them together in a single halacha. Tosafot and Ketubot basically quotes them together as if they're one halacha. But here, Tosafot here differentiates between them and says that there could be a distinction. She'Ein Marvim Simcha V'Simcha might be a general principle, which is there's no mixing of smachot, period. This is not necessarily unique to wedding or to marriage. This is true of any type of simcha that you might undertake. That is, ein me'arvim simcha b'simcha. That's a general principle. We might learn it out of, is samachta b'chagecha v'lo b'ishtecha, but that's not because ishtecha is unique. Ishtecha is just an example of an ein me'arvim simcha b'simcha. On the other hand, the second reason, which is mipnei sheminiach simcha derega v'osek b'simcha tishto, that might be unique to Nisuin. That might be unique to marriage. Marriage is a problem because it's so all-encompassing. It drives you to want to be Mesameach Ishto, which is going to detract from your Simcha Deregel. But any other Simcha pales in comparison to that, and therefore, it wouldn't be a problem on Yom Tov or on Chol HaMoed. Tosafot over here discusses, for instance, things like, how about a Sudat Brit Milah? Or Sudat Pidyon HaBen? Can you conduct those on Chol HaMoed? So Tosafot says, well, Simchat Milah, the Brit Milah, Sudat Brit Milah, you can do on Chol HaMoed. You know why? Number one is because it's not such a great Simcha. How do I know that? Because of Tzara de Yanuka. We don't make a Shechianu by a Brit Milah because of the pain that the baby undergoes. Again, this is Tosfot, the Shitato. We've discussed this in other occasions that this isn't so simple. There are many believe that you do make a Shechianu. That is the practice in Eretz Yisrael in general, to make a Shechianu by a Brit Milah. And number two, he says, which is the more obvious answer, I don't know why he brings as the second answer, which is that Brit Milah is a davar shekavua lo zman. A Brit Milah is something that falls out on a fixed date. So that's why you have to do it. because that's the day that it comes out. A wedding can be planned. You can choose the day that you want to have the wedding on. You can't choose the day you want to have the Brit Milah on. But then Tosafot goes on and says, oh, if it was a Sudat Pidyon HaBen, I'm not sure what to do. Again, this is Tosafot making the distinction about Shechianu. There's no Shechianu by a Brit Milah, but by Sudat Pidyon HaBen, there is a Shechianu. And so maybe that would be problematic to conduct a Sudat Pidyon HaBen on Chol HaMoed. Now, if you say, oh, it's Kavul Ozman, you're right. So then again, if it's Kavul Ozman, he has to do it. So maybe that's the case. What happens if it's Shalob Ozmano? So your opinion of Ben Shalob Ozmano, Mila Shalob Ozmano. Then all of a sudden, does that Suda become problematic because it's no longer Bizmano? Again, that might relate to whether Shein Marvin Simcha V'Simcha versus Mipnei Shemeach Simcha Deregel V'Osek V'Simcha Tishto. The other thing that, that's quite interesting, he says here, is that this din of Amarvim Simcha V'Simcha, which is a Gzerat HaKatuv, he says that it's connected Ktzat K'mo She'en Osim Mitzvot Chavilot Chavilot. It's very similar to the din found in the Gemara in Sotah, that you're not allowed to pile up mitzvot. You're not allowed to do a mitzvah, lots of mitzvot we saw in the Gemara in Pesachim as well, with regards to Kiddush and Avdolah. Ain't Osim Mitzvot Chavilot Chavilot. You can't make them into a big pile or burdens. So there the Rishonim discuss, what's the problem with Chavilot Chavilot? The problem with Chavilot Chavilot is because you can't handle the two of them by doing one and then the other at the same time. You're going to detract. You're not going to have enough bandwidth to deal with both of them. And you're going to somehow lose out on one of the mitzvot because you're not going to be so focused on it. That's one way to look at it. Well, the other problem is just to say that it looks like you're trying to discharge the obligation, like you're doing an assembly line of mitzvot and just trying to get rid of the mitzvot. And it's not a pleasant thing to do that when you stack things up and just try to get rid of them. That doesn't leave a good feeling. It's not a good impression on the mitzvot. So you could argue the same thing here. When Tosfot says chavilot, chavilot, you could ask the same question here. Is ein marvin simcha b'simcha? What's the problem here? Is the problem here simply that you just don't have enough bandwidth to deal with it? Or is the problem here that it looks like you're just stacking things up? You're piling things on top of each other. And it looks like you're just trying to get rid of these things all at once and not really giving each one its proper due. When Tosafot connects chavilot chavilot, it's interesting. You could have argued that they're separate, meaning that you could say that simcha has to do with one thing and chavilot chavilot has the other. But Tosafot connects the two of them together, which is also important in terms of this din of ein ma'arvin simcha b'simcha. This also has a nafkamina of one of these two reasons as to whether the only problem here is getting married, or is the problem the sudat nisuin? Is it actually the meal of the nisuin that is problematic? Because if you think that the problem here is simply ein marvin simcha b'simcha, then the sudat nisuin should also be problematic. On the other hand, if you say that the problem here is v'samachta b'chagecha v'lo b'ishtecha, then it's nisuin is that the problem. The suda is not the problem. It's nisuin itself that is the problem. Now it's interesting that by the suda of nisuin, which is true of suda of sheva brachot as well, in benching we add in the mizumon, we add in b'shas simcha b'me'ono. That's what we mentioned by this, that simcha b'me'ono. So we see this added level of simcha that is associated with nisuin and sheva brachot. And maybe because of that, nisuin is unique and has a special status of ein marvin simcha b'simcha. So that the Rav has a famous Torah about this issue of ein marvin simcha b'simcha, which again we've discussed on other occasions in the Gemara in Sukkah, which is he says that the requirement of simcha and Yom Tov is a simcha that comes from being lifnei Hashem. And that's the only thing that can generate the simcha on Yom Tov. If there's an exogenous variable that is generating the simcha, that does not accomplish the mitzvah of simcha on Yom Tov. And therefore the samachta b'chagecha v'lo b'shtecha, or ein marvin simcha b'simcha, is telling the same thing, that on Yom Tov, other smachot are taking you away from your primary goal. The same reason that we have an Isra Malacha on Yom Tov or on Chol HaMoed, which is to clear your decks from everything else and to focus on what you're supposed to be doing, which is having simcha of being lifnei Hashem, experiencing being lifnei Hashem. And any other simcha would detract from that, or any other distraction would take away from that ability to have that simcha. And therefore, ein marvin simcha b'simcha is because that other simcha is actually not engendering better v'samachta b'chagecha, it's actually detracting from samachta b'chagecha, and that's what the problem is here in terms of ein marvin simcha b'simcha. Now the Gemara says, Meitevei, kol elu shamru asurim lisa b'moed, all these individuals we say you can't get married on the moed, mutarim lisa erev haregel, they can all get married on erev yom tov. So kasha l'kulu, that's a problem for all of them. Because as Rashi points out, it means that it sounds like it's mutar l'chatchila to get married on erev yom tov, and then you have sheva brachot that come afterwards. Sheva brachot are going to run right into Yom Tov, right into Chol HaMoed. So why is that permissible? So I says, Lokasho. That's not a problem. Aman damar mishum simcha. The one who says that the problem here is simcha, ikar simcha chad yomahu. The major simcha, the primary simcha is on the first day. Everything after that is a lower form of simcha, and therefore is not problematic for the remainder of Yom Tov or Chol HaMoed, because it's just not a strong enough simcha that's either going to cause you a problem to distract you away from the regel, or it's not a problem, simcha, but simcha is just not so pronounced. You also know this from the fact that the first day of simcha is present even when people get married who have been previously married. It does have an impact, meaning that there is sheva brachot on the first day. The first day is a unique day in terms of the simcha. The major work or major investment that is done for a wedding is on the day of the wedding. The sheva brachot, that's like a sideshow. The wedding itself is the major tircha, and that's going to be the problem for the regel. For one day, people aren't going to hang out to get this all done. Meaning that if the person's not going to benefit from having the wedding meal on the Yom Tov itself, on the regel itself, he's not going to then hang out to get it to the regel in order to get his sheva brachot on the regel itself and to save the money from that or do it in that manner. It's just not worth it for him. Because since he can't start except for Erev HaRegel, he's not going to wait to do that because he could be at risk where something will happen on Erev HaRegel, and then he will be stuck and he won't be able to get married after the Regel, till after the Regel. So he's not going to take a risk of doing it on Erev HaRegel. That's just too much. But once you are doing it on the Regel itself, then we run into the problem, because then you're really mixing and matching the Simcha or the Torah or the undertaking that is needed for the wedding, and that might cause you to postpone it from the rest of the year. Okay, we'll stop over here, but here you see that distinction that there is a difference between Sheva Brachot and Nisuin itself. The way that the Shulchan Aruch Paskins is that you cannot get married, not on Chol HaMoed, not on Yom Tov itself, but you can get married on Erev Yom Tov and have the Sudat Nisuin on Yom Tov itself. And it does say that you can have Sheva Brachot on Chol HaMoed or Yom Tov itself. The one thing that they have a question about is Erusin, getting engaged, whether you can have a Sudat Erusin. Everybody agrees you can get engaged. The question is, can you have a Sudat Erusin? Or even if you can't have a Sudat Erusin, can you have a private Sudat Erusin on Yom Tov itself? And then there's a question about Sudat Shiduchin, the equivalent of an engagement party. Is that allowed on Chol HaMoed or not allowed on Chol HaMoed? And there's a machloket within the Achronim as to whether that is okay or not okay for a Sudat Shiduchin that's brought down by Mishneh Berurah. Okay, we're going to stop over here.